Blog Talk Radio.
Another edition of In and Out of Sports, the Coach's Corner, with yours truly, Coach Butch McAdams. And this show is sponsored by Horton's Funeral Service for over 80 years, simply the very best in family funeral care and the DMV. Their motto is dignity at any cost. And as always, the show is produced by my man out of Motown. He is Rick Hampton Sr. and powered by the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. Well, folks, continuing in the tradition of February, Black History Month, and our salute to Black brilliance, Black excellence in various fields, we will continue that salute tonight with our first guest. And I tell you, she is just a wonderful human being from a storied family of Baltimore City known for its service. She was officially sworn in by her father as the clerk of the Circuit Court of Baltimore City on December 2014. She was born, as I stated, into a family entrenched in public service, growing up in a family focused on working to make the community better. She was motivated to learn all she could while trying to be of service to those in need. And that led her to become a dedicated member of the Baltimore City school system, first as a classroom instructor, and later as a guidance counselor. And she also successfully ran and got elected to public office, winning a seat on the Baltimore City Council in 2004, representing the citizens of the 7th Council District. And currently, she is the Register of Wills. I am just so honored to introduce tonight in the Coach's Corner the Honorable Belinda K. Conaway. How are you, Belinda? And it is such an honor and a pleasure to have this visit with you. As I stated, I just have nothing but admiration and love for you and your family. Much respect.
Corner and have the coach in my corner.
I like that, and the coach will always be in your corner. Well, let's start off talking about, as I mentioned, your family. And recently I had Lisa Mitchell on, and the Mitchells of Maryland, of course, a well-known political dynasty. And what I mean by that, Belinda, is that once they had a member of Congress, a state senator, a city council man or member, all serving at the same time, followed by a second generation. Well, your family, the Conaways, once had a state delegate, city council member yourself, clerk of the court, and register of wills, all serving at the same time. When you look back, the first question is, do you consider yourself to be part of a political dynasty in Baltimore City?
Well, we are part of a political dynasty just simply because of the number of people that we had in office serving at the same time. But more of it has to do with part of it, and that's one thing that my father instilled in me, as well as my mother, who was an educator,
yeah.
that everyone is important. And when you have a job to do, you're supposed to do it well, and you're supposed to serve people. And it doesn't make a difference. My mother's an educator. She made it a point to know everyone in the building, you know, from the custodian to the cafeteria workers. Everyone was important because we all work together, and that's what makes it work. It's not just one person. It's all of us collectively pushing in the same direction. And so that, you know, my father made that important as a foundation. He always made sure that I understood how important it was that when people call you and they say they want to talk to you, that you call them back, that you're accessible, and that we are with the people, not above the people. And so that was our foundation. That, you know, if people put their trust in you, they think enough of you to click Conaway, then you are supposed to serve them and you're supposed to do the right thing and take care of people. And so that is what I hope.
Sure. And I like that, and I'm paraphrasing what you just said. You are with the people, not above the people. And we obviously know, as you've alluded to just now, the origin of your spirit and passion to serve. But from your recollect, what were the origins of your mother and your father? What started them in constituent service?
Well, my father, I call him the original. My father loved people. He's just, you know, every now and again, you find someone who just, he knew everybody. Knew
yes.
everybody, loved people. You know, he once worked as a bus driver, and he knew people and helped people. He had that community spirit about him. He's a city person, but I always say he has country roots where, you know, he believed in that we all look out for each other, we help each other, rise, fall, we do it together. And that's, you know, I would say to people, I said, you can't believe the people that come into this house. You know, people just come knock on the door. He'd open the door, go come in, talk. No, what the hell? You know, wow. And it didn't make a difference. It wasn't just about, you know, just the people who had a lot of money. There were a lot of poor people issues that he took up, and he would fight for what was right, even when the establishment tried to crush him. He refused to stop. He just believed in, you know, I'm going to speak out for my people. I'm going to, you know, press for what's right. And he just would not let it go. He was just a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, he was that.
People say, you know, like someone said to me about being registered wills, well, it's not that important, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, it's what you do with the office. If you don't think it's important, no, it isn't. You have to let people know the power of your office and what you can do to help them and what you can do to make things better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would certainly.
That's what we all be striving for.
Yeah. And your dad, he had that rare quality, like a Perrin Mitchell, a Clarence Mitchell, where he could go to the White House with a nice suit and tie and fit in well. But he could also
yeah.
stand on Pennsylvania Avenue and chop it up with the fellas. And he was comfortable and equal environment. And that's a
yeah.
rare, rare gift, Belinda.
Well, he was smart. He was smart, articulate, well-dressed.
Yes.
But he was also a boxer.
Mm.
And he loved to fight. He loved to fight. He loved to fight for those causes, but he could also, you know, he could also meet you in the street. And,
that's
you know,
right.
it was a good combination because a lot of times people didn't mess with him. You know, he was respectful with you. If you got out of order, you know, he could really take you to task. And he,
that's
you know,
right.
he knew how the city worked. He would take his time, you know, early on. he would go and sit in the court to see how court cases were handled. He saw how things were inequitable for African Americans, and that was an issue. Even as far as the Board of Elections, one of the first things he did when he got elected was push to get African Americans in the Board of Elections office. So, jobs, opportunities. You know, he just wanted us to have an equal chance as people.
At what point, and Belinda, as I stated in reading your bio, that you started off as an educator in the classroom and then as a guidance counselor. But what made you decide to get into the political arena? What motivated you?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, coming up, I was in high school when my father was attacked publicly, and he lost the election. And honestly, I never thought that I would run for office, and I never really understood why he continued to run for office. That amazed me that he would get out there. But I started going to the political forums and becoming more involved in what was going on, and I got a chance to see how you can really change people's lives, how you can really help them through politics. You know, when I served on city council, I think probably the first couple of years, I would thank people for calling me back, because as an educator, you're always begging for services, trying to get help, you know, pleading the case for the children, trying to get someone to do things that they're supposed to do. And then when I was elected to city council, and, you know, people who could actually do those things called me back, I was like, you know, oh, my God, thank you for calling me back. So, but you get to see that. When you hold public office, you can really help people. And that's what kind of got me hooked. Like, you know, you can help people as an educator, but this is a different level of help. And there, you know, there are lots of situations. St. Gregory's the Great is a church. Father Damien called me one day. He was having a problem because a tree fell, and it was endangering the old cross that they had. I mean, the tree literally crowned the cross and could have crushed it. The cross had been there for, I don't know how long, 100 years or how long. And the city refused to move it. And I was able to go and meet with forestry and, you know, give this compelling case. And it was a big deal because the city council person was actually on site and was there to advocate. And they removed the tree. You know, which is just one example. Or, you know, the city comes and tears up cement and they don't repair it, and you can get it taken care of. So that there's things that mean, you know, just a little for people that have resources, but for people that don't have resources, getting that help, having that lifeline, you know, your elected official calling you back and advocating for you means everything.
When your father was with us, he was a voice, be it when he was in Annapolis as a representative, or if he's on the radio, he was a voice of the people. What would Frank Sr. say about the current situation, A, of the country politically, and his beloved city of Baltimore?
Well, I think his first concern would be Baltimore, and it's funny that you asked that question. I came across a letter that my father wrote. He was running for mayor, and at the time there was an interim mayor, and he wrote a letter and said, listen, people running for mayor, everybody has great ideas. Why don't we come together? Because the citizens of Baltimore should not have to wait until the election occurs before change comes. Why don't we get together and start, you know, implementing some of these great ideas now so that the citizens get the help that they deserve and the services that they deserve? And even though he, you know, the next time that happened, he wasn't alive, but it was still relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him, yeah, politics is, that was his forte.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, he wanted people to get the services that they deserve. He didn't want people losing their home over a water bill.
That's right. Yes.
He wanted city services to operate so that they support people. And he was someone, he would go into city agencies, you know, and advocate for people. And it amazes me that the stories, that the people that, I mean, he's been gone for 6 years, February 15th.
Sure.
But still encounter people that have these stories. They always want to tell me about, like, you know, let me tell you about your father. And there's one lady lost her home and shouldn't have. So he looked through the paperwork. Something was not done correctly, and he made them pay so that the lady would have a decent place to stay. You know, those are the types of things that kept him getting up in the morning, whether he felt good or didn't. You know, he always said, I'm outstanding but improving.
Absolutely.
He was ready to fight for people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I think he would be very disappointed that we're still struggling with the same issues in Baltimore City. It just doesn't seem to get better.
It doesn't seem to get better because, and again, please excuse me, but, you know, Clarence Mitchell III, who was a part of that group with your dad and Perrin Mitchell and people who were really representatives, they wanted the job instead of the position, okay? But Clarence Mitchell III would always say that the citizens get the politicians that they deserve, meaning that you have the opportunity to vote someone in if he or she is fulfilling their campaign promises, and you have the power to vote them out. And
right.
I'm looking at your father, who, as you stated, had a tremendous heart, but yet the power structure came after him. And I'm going to say this. You should be the mayor of Baltimore City in terms of your resume, in terms of your service. On the city council, you did a marvelous job. In your opinion, what happened? Now, I have my opinion. But respectfully, I'll ask you.
Well, you know, politics is politics, and the establishment decided that they wanted me gone. And, you know, in all fairness, they tried to create opportunities for me, you know, come, let's work together. But that's not the side. I don't want to be on that side. I want to be on the side with people. And so even though I can say that it's over a residency issue, but the one thing that I'm proud of is they could never say that I didn't do my job. They couldn't say
Absolutely.
That I didn't call people back. They couldn't say that I didn't serve people. They couldn't say that I didn't vote in the interest of the people that I was elected to serve. And so even though, you know, they did this whole smear campaign, I was okay. The next day I got up and went to work. I lost the election. People were shocked to see me. Like, they thought that I was going to be under a rock or something. And hey, but the people that I helped, that I served, they didn't forget. You know, those people still make it a point to say something, to say, you know, thank you for helping me out. You know, there was a lady who couldn't get oil delivery, and it was cold because of the trash in her alley. I was able to get DPW to come out and clean. Oil delivery man came the next day. There was just as much trash as there was the day before. And so we worked it out so that the delivery man waited for them to clean that alley so that the oil could get down there. That doesn't mean a lot to people that don't need oil delivery, but to the people that need it, it means everything.
Absolutely.
So I can say that stood with me, and I mean, I have no regrets, none. It's okay. They came after me, but it's all right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, life goes on. You know, it's how it is.
You know, absolutely.
It is. You take.
And look, as I've stated to you off air a number of times, you're resilient. You are blessed, you're talented, and you have a giving heart. So people that fall under that umbrella, they're going to be okay. But as I've stated before, it's not about Belinda Conaway being okay. It's about the citizens of Baltimore. And what I didn't understand, and you know what? I understand the viciousness and the skullduggery of politics. I got that. But what I don't have and what I still can't figure out is why did the citizens or some citizens fall for it? That's what I don't understand. Why did they buy it?
Well, you know, old people will have a saying, you don't miss the water until the well runs dry. I can tell you that people were still calling me for help after I was out of office.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked until the very last day. Sometimes people think, you know, the grass is always green on the other side. People sell you this package. Everybody thinks this person is great and so much better. But the question is, you know, are you getting the services? And so, you know, when I have a community association president that backs the person opposing me, and I've sat at her meeting almost every month, you know, 3 or 4 months later, she was calling me, I miss you, Belinda. I said, really? I was thinking, like, really? You thought the grass was green on the other side. She wasn't getting the level of service that I was given. But that's okay. That's okay. It's a learning opportunity for everybody. You know, mm-hmm. I got to learn a little bit. They got to learn a little bit. We all learn and grow. But like I said, the people that I helped, the people that stopped me, you know, and said, Belinda, you know, thank you so much. Belinda, I miss you. That's worth everything. You know, I do it all over again so that, you know, people, as long as people appreciate the job that I do, the establishment, you know, they are what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't want to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. And
or they call them the milk and cookie crowd.
Well, I call them a little something worse than that. But but what would you say, and how would you define a council person or representative, a delegate or state senator? What would be some of the components of an excellent public servant?
Someone who is connected to people,
mm-hmm.
who takes the time to listen to the issues, that takes the time to go into the neighborhood to see what's going on firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
Someone that also knows how to rally the vote so that legislation can pass.
Mm-hmm.
And someone that promotes legislation that's good for people.
Mm-hmm. I'm optimistic about the direction that the new mayor, he's a young guy, Brandon Scott, but I'm optimistic that Mayor Scott can come in with some fresh ideas, enthusiasm, and move the city in a better direction. And he's come in thus far and trying to change some things. And I want to get your thoughts on one or two of them. The first part is to take away some of the power that the mayor would have on the Board of Estimates. The Board of Estimates for people who are outside of Baltimore. See, here in D.C., we don't have a Board of Estimates, okay? But
mm-hmm.
in Baltimore, you've got the Board of Estimates, and there are five votes, and three of the votes are controlled by the current mayor. And some people want it to remain intact. Some folks want to change it. Your thoughts on that, Belinda?
Well, I'd love to say that that's a great new idea, but I can tell you that I proposed that when I was on city council. It failed. I proposed
mm-hmm.
it. So, I mean, there are things that need to be done. I'm more interested in getting things done than instead of talking about it. You know, if you're going to get it done, let's do it. Mm-hmm. Normally, the mayor likes to have city council members in their pocket, so they know that when their legislation comes through, they normally know that they have the 8 votes that they need. They'd mm-hmm. like to have more, but, you know, normally if the mayor is very political, which most of them are, they have those 8 votes that they can count on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'd be interested to see if it actually comes to fruition. Talking about it is good.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other big issue is that Mayor Scott, Brandon Scott, has instituted a chief administrator. And for me, it's no more than possibly a different title of a deputy mayor. And some folks have an issue with that. Your thoughts on that?
To be done. So if you feel like, you know, you need or you know, the voters feel like there's a need for a city administrator, so be it. But at the end of the day, is the work being done? You can have 500 people, and maybe only 100 of them are actually working. You know, I mean, what is being done? Because, here in the city, the crime is horrible.
Yes.
You know, the water bill situation is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's things that actually need to be done. And so there's a city administrator, so be it, but is the work being done? And that's always my question at the end of the day. It's, you know, all good, we all show up, work, we go somewhere, but is the work being done? Or are you just, you know, another pebble on the beach?
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, and it's a great segue for my next question as we continue this wonderful visit with the Honorable Belinda Conaway, currently the Register of Wills, Baltimore City, and no one knows the political landscape better than our guests. And Belinda, let's talk about the crime in Baltimore City. It has been off the chart. And I've said that the citizens obviously deserve better. A lot of cities, including my beloved Washington, D.C., New York, Detroit, a lot of cities have gone through what Baltimore is going through. But man, this thing is lingering too long with 300-plus homicides for the last, 5 years? What are some of the things that you think needs to be implemented to reduce some of the homicides and violent crimes in the city?
Well, I think that we lack the opportunities in underserved communities. There's one component that's near and dear to my heart, and that's truancy. There are a lot of children who are not in school. People don't think that it's important, but you learn how to follow rules, you learn how to resolve issues, you learn that you can't do everything you want to do. And those are good qualities for employees. So, you know, one of the things that I learned in working with children is that, you know, helping them get a summer job.
Mm-hmm.
Help them understand that, you know, you don't just not show up for your job. You know, if you're scheduled to work, you're supposed to work. And then getting that experience and learning, hey, if I just don't show up, I'm going to lose my job.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same thing with school. They need to show up for school. You know, that's a problem in Baltimore City. It's a blaring issue that is not addressed, the truancy. And so children get in the habit, young people get in the habit of not having to be accountable, you know, showing up if they want to show up, don't show up, doesn't make any difference, you know, what's going to happen, nothing. So they don't get the training that they should. They don't get the education, but they also don't pick up some of those life skills that they should have.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there should be more opportunities for young people. We, in Baltimore City, we have federal, state, and city offices. There's no reason why children shouldn't have an opportunity to go in and do an apprenticeship, or, you know, to go in one day a week and work in an office. Figure out what they like to do. See what it's like having a job. Even if they give them a stipend. But there's so many government offices in Baltimore City that there's no reason why they can't do it.
I agree.
There's no reason. People need to see the opportunities, because the money is flowing through Baltimore City. It's definitely flowing through Baltimore City, but it's skipping over the people in need.
Why does that happen? I'm looking at certain areas, and I hear it, and I'm not in Baltimore. You are. You know it as well as anyone. But I'm hearing that the Sandtown, Winchester area is one of the most neglected areas, not just in the state of Maryland, but in the United States. Why is that? I was told, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I was told that money has been earmarked to that community, but it never got to the community.
Well, that's an old story here in Baltimore City. You look at the funds from the racetrack, Pimlico Racetrack.
Right.
Just didn't seem to trickle down to the areas where they were supposed to. And so, these things becoming exposed, it's important. It's important that we talk about it. It's important that we understand that the money is coming in, that we understand how to access the money, which I don't, it just doesn't, it seems like we're always on the late end of getting that information. You know, you start peeling back the layers and you find out, okay, Mount Washington got money, and I'm just, please, Mount Washington,
sure,
don't call me, but just for example, Mount Washington got money, but, you know, you have Pimlico Elementary that didn't get any. How is that possible? Money comes through. Baltimore City never seems to get where it's supposed to. It's like, for example, when they talked about building the casino.
Yes.
And one of the things that I asked, okay, we know that these are jobs that we know are coming. Are we going to get people interview ready to work with the Mayor's Office of Employment Development to say, okay, can we start working on getting people interview ready? That means that whatever the qualifications are for these jobs, we know that they're coming a year from now.
Mm-hmm.
Can we start working with the population to make sure that they are qualified for these jobs when they come? That's the piece of it. You know, somebody not having their high school diploma, really, in this day and age, them from getting a job. So if you know that you have somebody that's here that says, okay, I need a job, I want a job, or I have a job, I'd like a better opportunity, that's what the Mayor's Office of Employment Development should be working on, making sure that people are interview ready. So when all these jobs come about in Baltimore City, that our citizens are able to get it. I mean, a good example of that was when Shoppers came to Mondawmin Mall. And part of that agreement was that they would work to hire people within a one-mile radius of the store. And, you go and I see people from the neighborhood, and they're working. But, I mean, we don't just want people to have jobs, but that's one step. You know, we need opportunities. We have a lot of good people, a lot of smart people, but they don't see the opportunities. They just don't see them, and that has to change.
And speaking of has to change, a couple of years ago, you had not one, not two, but three different Baltimore officials were indicted and went to jail. A state senator, a delegate, and a mayor. And look, I know in every occupation, you have corruption. But when you are a representative and the people have the confidence in you to represent them, that's a serious matter, and you can't let them down. What can be done? Are there any pieces of legislation or what could be done to prevent corruption in the future? And every time there's currently the state's attorney, and her situation does not seem like it's anything illegal or any lack of ethics, but what it does appear to be is a lack of transparency and a lack of accountability. And under normal circumstances, people would say, oh, that's just paperwork. But when you have a trail of corruption, a path of corruption, every single thing now has a spotlight on it. How do you eliminate that? Yeah.
So I don't know that you can legislate that away, because people fall victim to circumstances sometimes, you know. But I also think that, you know, it's a terrible thing to have the news talking about you, and nothing that you say is going to satisfy them. So as a black person, as a black elected official, there are going to be times when, you know, they come up with something and they're not going to let it, and nothing you say is going to be right. Now, I'm not defending anybody, and there's certain people that I'm not a fan of, but right is right and wrong is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And just in looking at what's going on, it's just like, okay, this story has been going on for, I think, about a year, and most of the times that I've heard it, there's nothing new. So it's just, you know, it's just rehashing the same thing, and it's relentless. But, you know, it's not easy being an elected official. And when they come for you, they come for you.
But you know what, but Belinda, and I always say this, and I concur that it's not easy to being an elected official, but it's not for everyone, okay? And that they will come for you. But, I have two sayings. And the first one is a biblical quote, and I'm paraphrasing here. Let not your good be evil spoken of. Okay, and meaning that, you know, you're doing the right thing, but you are giving some negative impressions. And the second one is my favorite, is, hey, the buzzards can't circle if it ain't nothing dead, okay? And the situation that I alluded to, the current situation that you said has been going on, and I think that the way that you end it is to come out, make a statement, and says, this is what happened exactly. Any questions? And then after that, you don't hold any more press conferences, it's done. But if you don't have a statement, if you don't address it to your constituency, then, yeah, it's going to fester. That's how I see it.
Well, the way I see it was a statement was made. The statement was made, well, the trips did not come at a cost to the taxpayer.
Okay? Right. Mm-hmm.
The city, the state did not pay for these trips. That
mm-hmm.
is a statement, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then that's a clarifying statement. Okay, yes, didn't come at a cost to the taxpayer. So then the media goes back and says, oh, okay, well, let's figure out how much you make per day and say, okay, it did cost taxpayers money because this is how much we pay you per day, and you were so that's why I say that sometimes nothing you say
mm-hmm.
is going to be right. It's just going to let them dig a deeper hole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean that, and And you know what? If I was on the outside looking in, I would think that only African American politicians are the problem in Baltimore City.
Well, no. I mean, you've got, as you stated, you've had corruptions through the test of time, and they come in all flavors and in all sizes. However, that when you do have, and I'll be candid, I was very disappointed with all of the three individuals who were indicted. And one was a personal friend of mine, and I love him as a brother, but I was very disappointed in him. The other one was extremely hypocritical because she presented one side and was doing something totally opposite. And the third, I was furious with Mayor Pugh because she totally, in my opinion, let the citizens down. And, you know, I don't see...
Like I said, some of these people that we commenting on have come for me. But right is right and wrong is wrong. Now, in one case, somebody was on a board, and there were a lot of people on the board with their hands in the cookie jar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, I mean, as African Americans, we have to be enlightened people. And, you know, okay, you look at me, but let's look at what everybody is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just pick and choose, you know, the most salacious ones. But what about everybody else? How was everybody else held accountable? All other people that got contracts.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean. It, you know, African Americans are not the problem with Baltimore City. If you let some people tell the story.
I will concur.
We can't be the only people doing these things.
No, and you have to be, and during my time on the air, as well as your dad, when he put his representative hat down officially and put his talk show hat on, I think we were cut from the same cloth, and that we didn't have a cut card, that we would hold everybody accountable in equal fashion. Okay, but once again... You know, no, black folks aren't the only ones responsible for Baltimore, but a lot of them are co-conspirators. They are. But having said that, Belinda, your thoughts on this, and this is kind of controversial because some people in favor of it, some people say it's a detriment, but the consent decree, your thoughts?
Okay. I want money to come in. Are you talking about for the school system?
Just the whole situation that the city is under, and again, a lot of folks are saying that the police can't do their job because their hands are tied. And I don't subscribe to that, but I want to get your thoughts on it.
I don't see where anything has gotten better. And that's my problem. You know, people that are supposed to be overseeing it and, you know, all this money going to a lot of people, again, at the end of the day, the benefits are just not here. You know, I think that there are a lot of police officers that work very hard. And, I mean, I've had a lot of good interaction with police officers, with maybe one exception. But for the most part, you know, if something goes wrong, I'm calling for the police to get assistance. But the consent decree and money going to people who are supposed to be overseeing things and making things better, they aren't better.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
that's just truth of the matter. They are not better.
And then one of the
to do.
Excuse me, go ahead.
No, I said so I consent to disagree.
Okay. And then one of the final questions in terms of the city is, and this was a latest discussion, the spy plane. Your thoughts on that?
Very intrusive. Very intrusive. Seemed like the data was there to show that they could actually, you know, help, especially at night. We need, you know, we don't need to just pay money for services that make us feel like, ooh, there's a plane and something happens. No, we need actual help. You know, I mean, somebody was shot and killed in front of my house. Nobody called for the spy plane. The police came here and asked to see our video footage, camera footage. So I don't think that the spy plane is the answer. You know, I know that as a city council person, people were fearful about reporting problems. They didn't want to call into the police station. It was a problem because if they call and the police show up and they don't see what was reported, they would knock on the door and say, you know, you said people were hanging around. I don't see the people hanging around. And that made them fearful because they didn't want the police knocking on their door. They didn't want people to know that they were calling in. So it's like it's a whole culture that has to change where people feel like they can give information, you know, and know that it's going to be held confidential, you know, that they're not going to put themselves in harm's way by saying, you know, hey, we got young people hanging out in a vacant house down the street. So, it, you know, it's going to have to be holistic in trying to, you know, get people on board to say, hey, you know, we're in this together. We can solve this. But we have to have opportunities for people. You know, in my opinion, when I look at the news, I say it's a lot of young people with a lot of time on their hands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need
opportunities
to go into some of these offices, some of these agencies that we have, and have an opportunity to volunteer, to see how the agencies work, to go and report, to see that, you know, hey, teachers might not be as bad as you think they are. They're much better than a boss. Those types of experiences are important. I mean, I love talking to young people when they, you know, first get a job. And, you know, I ask them, well, how is it? And, you know, to listen to some of the complaints. And I say, oh, that boss don't have nothing on your teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's all a part of getting them the experiences that they need and showing them that the opportunities are there, helping to keep them on the right path so that they can take advantage of those opportunities, because the streets are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
That's right. That's right. The streets are never closed. And I would be remiss if I didn't get your opinion and your thoughts on this whole pandemic and how it's been handled locally, which I think it's been handled fairly well, and your thoughts on the vaccine.
Well, let me start with the vaccine. I think that's been poorly handled. In this day and time, people should be able to go to one place, get on the list, one list, and then get appointments from there. As they have it now, you've got people going all over the place, and I've dealt with it in trying to get a vaccine for my mother. You know, you get up in the middle of the night and you try and you call first thing in the morning and, you know, you're on hold forever. And, you know, they have you go through all these prompts just to tell you no vaccine is available. And my question is, okay, why are people at a phone center answering the phone? You know, you have citizens going through prompts on hold only for a live person to get on the phone and tell you, I'm sorry, there are no vaccines available, no appointments available. You could put that on an automated message. You know,
agree.
Walgreens that requires you to have an account. You have to sign into your account and you go through all, jump through all those hoops on no appointments. You know, it is a mess. It's very frustrating. My employees were not given the opportunity to get the vaccine, and we're in the courthouse. Courthouse employees were able to get the vaccine, not the Register of Wills employees and not Orphans Court employees. It's poorly managed. I'm very disappointed. The disparities in different communities, you know, people that are not able to constantly call, constantly, you know, check back for a vaccine. And you think about people that are, you know, 85 years old. Are they supposed to constantly, you know, be on the computer trying to find an appointment? There has to be a better way. I just be one list as the vaccines come in, pull from the list, you know, pick some kind of priority. You know, if you're going to pick all the people over 80 and let them go, but have some semblance of order. This is utter chaos. You know, people jumping on 50 different sites all over the state of Maryland trying to get a vaccine.
Now, what would you tell some people from the African-American communities that are reluctant and who have in their mind a lot of fears based on fiction versus fact? What would you tell them?
Well, to be succinct, as I understand it, you can get the vaccine, and if you get COVID, you probably won't be hospitalized.
Mm-hmm.
You could not get the vaccine, and you could possibly die. And, I mean, when I saw that, I said, that's kind of it in a nutshell. So I could still get it, but if I get it, you know, I'll feel bad, but I probably won't be hospitalized. For me, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but, you know, I got sick right after my father passed, and I had a rare strain of the flu and a rare strain of, pneumonia,
mm-hmm.
and it almost killed me. It almost killed me, literally. So for those people who are, you know, thinking, you know, do I want to take the chance? Do I not want to take the chance? You know, you don't want to get some virus that could kill you. You know, you don't want to be on the other end in the hospital saying, I should have, would have, could have. So,
no,
as frustrating as it is, keep trying to get that vaccine. Get on as many lists as possible with hopes that you'll be able to get one.
Mm-hmm. And being a former educator in the classroom, a counselor, what are your thoughts on reopening the schools? I'm, as a retired educator,
ooh,
I'm totally against it unless you have every single educator with both dose of vaccine. No, I'm not in favor of it.
I was in the classroom during H1N1.
Mm-hmm.
I was never given Clorox wipes, Lysol spray, any kind of agent to clean the desk. And, you know, those were things that I purchased myself.
Mm-hmm.
So when they talk about opening the schools, my first thought is, who's going to make sure that, you know, the desks are clean, that there's Lysol? You know, these are things that are hard to get now. you have a hard time finding Lysol and Clorox wipes. But are these supplies going to be available to educators? And where are the children going to eat? I mean, normally, you know, there are a lot of children in the cafeteria at one time. That's not even feasible at this point. So I cringe when they talk about, I want the children in school. I'm concerned that the children have been home for so long. I don't know how they can do it safely. I don't know that they'll have the supplies. Who's going to clean the bathrooms? Think about how just how regularly everything would have to be cleaned. You've got the handrails, even the children that run their hands along the wall, all of those things that need to be cleaned. Is the school going to be given the tools that they need to operate safely? Safe for everyone, safe for the children, safe for the teachers.
Absolutely. And then finally, as we have alluded to several times, your current job, a very important one, and just as you've done with previous jobs, you are excelling in terms of providing excellent service. And when you would see your dad, Frank Sr., hey, Frank, how you doing? Excellent, but improving. Okay, that was his tag. And when I think of Belinda Conaway, your tag is, hey, where there's a will, there's a way. Talk about, your job, your responsibilities of a registered wills, because a lot of people don't know what it is. And then secondly, why is it so important for folks to have a will?
Wow. Okay. Well, the registered wills oversees the administration of decedent's estate. We help people with the paperwork, with appointing their personal representative. It's very, very important. And there are two things that happened, significant events, that made it very clear to me how important this was. First, my father passed. Then I almost died. And that was back to back. And I wasn't even 50 years old. So for me, getting people to understand the importance of writing a will, it's like a fire in my bones. People don't understand, unless you've been there, you don't really understand how important it is. But for your family, that will can mean everything. So there are a few scenarios that I think that people can relate to.
Okay.
One is because we probably know people in this situation. People were married and they separated, never got a divorce. Been separated 20, 30 years. They haven't seen the spouse, don't know where the spouse is. Nobody's seen them. They're not even in the state of Maryland. But if you die, let me tell you, they will show up. And you don't have a will, they will be looking for half. We have heartbreaking stories, you know, where one parent has been absent, hasn't done anything to raise the children, has done nothing. The spouse dies, they show up. And if there's no will, there's no guide, there's nothing to say how you want your assets distributed. Now, I always say, you know, we all have characters in our family. You know the characters in your family better than we did.
Mm-hmm.
Whichever one of the children is the least likely to take care of business, you know, that might not be on solid financial ground, they're the first one to come down to the office and get into your bank account. And then, you know, the other siblings come, oh, no, they shouldn't be. It's too late. Too late. So you get your affairs in order. Can Americans say, you know, well, I don't have anything. I don't have that much. And I always tell them that someone is coming for your grandmother's pearls. And you think you might not have much, but there are things that you have that are important. Some things have been handed down from generation to generation. They may be sitting in a box in your closet. Nobody knows they're valuable. So we have to think about those things. I can tell you that when my father passed months later, my son asked me about his car, this Buick Riviera.
Mm-hmm.
And, he asked me if I was going to have it towed. Because it wasn't running. It was just, you know, sitting. Probably. I said, but do me a favor. I said, would you look it up and see how much it's worth? He came back downstairs like lightning, telling me how much the car's worth. You know, the car's popular, a lot of people. So I say that to say that, you know, your family may not be aware of how valuable some of your assets are. And if you don't put it in a will, some of them end up at the Goodwill, end up in a tow yard because your family doesn't know. So you've worked hard for your assets. Let us know who you want to inherit them. And then there's, you know, the situations from maybe 30 years ago. Maybe you were dating somebody. Person had a baby. You all were dating, and you listed that on the birth certificate as the father. 5 years later, you find out that you're not the father. But there's still birth certificates circulating around that say that you are. So we encourage people to get your business in order, get your affairs straight. So that, you know, no, and so we don't like people in our business, but if something happens to you, you might want somebody to know that.
Yeah, and it's not that. Just speak to this briefly. Got a couple minutes left. This has been fabulous, as I knew it would be. But it's not that difficult. It's not that time-consuming. And it's not that expensive to get a will, correct?
Correct. It's easy to do. You can write it yourself if you desire. If you call the office, we have resources that can help you. There are some free resources to help. The most important part is getting it done. Get it taken care of. You know, you want to make sure that your will is dated, that you say who you want to be your personal representative, somebody who's responsible that will take care of the paperwork, that will distribute your assets the way that you want them to be distributed. You sign it. You have two witness signatures, and that's it. But it's important to have those witness signatures because, you know, sometimes, and I hate to say it, but we've seen it where wills change between the time they leave your house and the time they get to the courthouse. Something has changed. So, you know, we encourage people to bring it to the Register of Wills for safekeeping. We run a special. It's $5. If you live forever, we'll keep it forever. It's not a bad deal.
No,
so,
it's not. Mm-mm.
Write your will. You know, we don't write the will, but if you call us, we will help you with resources. And like I said, a lot of them are free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for our Baltimore listeners, give out some contact information.
Okay, we're located 111 North Calvert Street in the old post office building. The phone number is 410-752-5131. We are not accepting public traffic at this time, but if you call, we will make sure that you are taken care of. 410-752-5131.
And finally, you know, I'm not going to let you go without giving you another tough question because you can handle it. And look, I know you are totally happy where you are in life with your family, with your current job. You're doing a great job. However, you're still young. Could there possibly be another campaign for another office in Belinda Conaway?
Well, you never know what the future is going to hold. My father was, I believe, 82 when he announced that he was running for mayor and he was going to challenge the current mayor to a foot race.
I remember that.
So that's just to say, you know, we're tough people. I enjoy being the Register of Wills for Baltimore City. I love it. It's a place where I've been able to bring about a lot of change. We've been able to educate a lot of people and help them understand the importance of having a will. And those are things that I love. But I also love serving people. So I'm never going to say what I'm not going to do. But I am thankful for the voters that put the faith in me to be their Register of Wills. And that's where I am right now. Now we'll see what comes in the future. And I guess, and I'm guessing, Coach, when you look at me, you don't see these gray hairs on my head.
No.
I'm no spring chicken. I'm not out the pasture yet, but.
Well, I tell you what, as you stated so appropriately at the beginning of this interview, when I welcomed you into the Coach's Corner, and I'm paraphrasing, you said, yes, I'm in the Coach's Corner, but the coach is in my corner, and I will be in your corner in any endeavor. I'm with you. You have my support.
Well, I thank you so much, and I don't take it for granted, because anybody that's ever been in politics or attempted to be in politics knows that you got to have good people behind you. You really do. It can be a tough job, but when you got good people behind you, you can get the job done. And so I thank you for that, and I thank you for this opportunity. I also would like to give a shout-out to my staff because, again, you know, it's not one person above everybody else. You know, it's a great group of people that we have serving the citizens, and they do a tremendous job, and they make it possible for me to be able to, you know, be out in front and promoting people. And one thing I've said to them, you know, your job is important. If you don't think so, no one else will. You know, and it's been a great uplift because the Register of Wills office had been overlooked for so long, and we were able to really get some things done. But we all work together.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of shout-outs, before you leave, our mutual friend, I call him the godfather of Baltimore City, Clee Brister, is listening, and he told me to tell you hello.
Hello, Mr. Cleve. Mr. Cleve is one of those great people, too. You know, we have a lot of great people in Baltimore City, and some of them have been on the forefront of the fight. Mr. Cleve is one of them.
He's absolutely.
He's been fighting all the time for, you know, helping people get what they are entitled to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love you, Mr. Cleve. Thank you so much for the shout-out. He's one. He hasn't been able to have his celebration. Now, you normally have a celebration for people who are 100 years old. And we're hoping that will change because those milestones are helpful, you know?
Absolutely. Well, speaking of helpful, this has been extremely helpful, and now continual salute to Black brilliance and excellence, and none better than our guest. Belinda Conaway, love you and love the family, and hey, I'm always just a phone call away. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity, and you know that I have much admiration for you. Keep on telling it like it is, Coach.
I can't help it. Like your dad, I don't know how, I don't know how
to
do it any other way. Thank you, Belinda.
All right, and thanks to everyone.